copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is Martin Robinson. I live in Birmingham, England, and I speak English in a very particular kind of way because I was born in India and brought up in Scotland of English parents. So that gives me a particular approach to English. So I hope you'll be able to understand my version of English, and I'm hoping that I'll understand your version of English. So we're talking about preparing the ground, and I'm going to suggest that the first priority when you're coming to plant a church is to understand the culture. And we can take that in two kinds of ways. First of all, in our context, we're talking about a broadly European context. So in very general terms, what does it mean to understand European culture? So for example, we need to be aware that we're working in a broadly post-Christian culture. That is to say that the kind of privileges that the church once enjoyed have gone. We are no longer in positions of privilege and power, and that has an implication for the way in which we might begin to approach our church planting. Secondly, we need to be aware of the Protestant and Catholic divide, and that has impacted Europe in all kinds of ways. For example, in Switzerland, I was speaking to a church planting team recently, and they had been planting churches in that part of Switzerland which had previously been strongly Catholic. And the approach they took was broadly a signs and wonders kind of approach, where they were having larger meetings and calling people to be healed and to see all sorts of other miraculous demonstrations of the power of God. And these were remarkable meetings. Many pagan people, many witches were converted, and churches were started as a consequence of that. They took exactly the same method to the parts of Switzerland that had previously been strongly Protestant, and they got no result at all. And so they had to go back to the drawing board and ask the question, well, why in the same nation, same language, are the results from our same method so different? And it was this Catholic Protestant background which had made a significant difference. So we need to be aware of those sorts of issues. And we need to be aware of the fact that we're living in a postmodern context, and that means that everything is available to be questioned. And we need to know how to navigate that, because actually that could either be to our disadvantage, because everything about God is being questioned, or it can be to our advantage. Everything about science and reason and secularism is also being questioned. So actually that's quite a useful thing to be able to navigate and be familiar with. And then lastly, we're increasingly in a post-secular context. That's a term that's been used recently by some Dutch sociologists. And what they mean by that is that God is back. God is back in the European context in a variety of ways. He's back because many, many people are coming to Europe from other parts of the world where God is a very real part of their everyday lives. And they may be Muslims, they may be Sikhs, they may be Buddhists, they may be Hindus, they may be Christians. In fact, more than 50% of all the migrants that come to Europe are Christians before they come. So God is back in that sort of way. God is back too because there's a huge interest in all things that are spiritual. That might not necessarily be Christianity, but nevertheless, the question of God is beginning to be raised in people's hearts and minds, and that's something that we need to take seriously. So that's the first priority, to understand the culture. That's the broadest possible way in which we can begin to think about culture. And of course, it will also be true that in our particular situation, there will be local variations, there will be local narratives, there will be local traditions, there will be local things that we need to take account of. So however we go about it, the first task is to think, well, what is it that makes the people in this particular cultural setting interested, excited? What is it that is unique and peculiar to these people? The second priority then, just before I finish that, so to summarize, we're saying really that the context in Europe is open but cautious. I think that's the way I would describe European peoples. They're open to some kind of discussion about spiritual things, but they're cautious about formal Christianity. They're cautious about the church in particular, because they're aware that the church in the past has abused power. So open, but cautious. Now, there are some exceptions to that broader picture within the European context, which we just need to be aware of. And we've mentioned one of them already, namely immigrant communities behave differently than those who are from the indigenous culture. Secondly, there are also within Europe all kinds of marginalized groups who also have different patterns of behavior. And just to give you one example of that, right across Europe, the Romani people are marginalized. And yet, interestingly, in many countries, they're much more open to the gospel than the indigenous community. Now, we just need to take note of that. That's a variation. And it's also true to say that there are particular needy groups in many of our big cities that also respond in slightly different ways to the general population. So, for example, somebody I know came to Madrid with the idea of starting a student ministry. And he began work only to discover that students in Madrid at that time weren't interested in God at all. And almost in desperation, he turned to the drug addicts and to those who were in that very, very needy community. And they started responding to Christ in large numbers. And today, the church that he established, Bethel, the ministry that he established, is one of the largest Protestant congregations in the whole of Spain. So that particular needy group responded differently to the general population. So that's a little bit about culture. And then the second need is to recruit the team. And a couple of issues that we need to pay attention to. First of all, note that there's a difference between team and work group. I'm going to say a little bit more about that in the next session, so I won't explore it too much at the moment, but just note that a team and a work group are slightly different kind of animals. All teams can also be work groups. In other words, teams can do work, but not all work groups function as teams. And I'll explain a bit more about that in the second part of the session. The third need then is for the team, as it's being recruited, to be trained. We've already said that the team needs to understand the culture or the subculture that they're trying to reach. And subcultures can be quite complicated. I mentioned a few minutes ago that my friend in Switzerland moved to a Protestant part of Switzerland, in fact it was Zurich, and when they looked at Zurich they found there were at least 32 very different subcultures within the city of Zurich. And what they began to realize as they studied those subcultures was that even if you were very successful in reaching one subculture, people even of the same age group, the same socioeconomic background who were in another subculture would not necessarily be impressed by the fact you'd reached at the first subculture. So subcultures are also quite important. The training that we engage in needs to lead to a strategy. So it's one thing to learn about how to plant a church, but actually training that doesn't lead to a strategy doesn't help us very much. So the idea is that the training is going to lead us to a very specific kind of strategy. And strategy means that we're constantly going to be reviewing what we're doing. So in other words, we're going to incorporate into our training method a kind of action reflection model. In that sense, the training never stops, because however far we go with our training, once we actually start the church planting, we might find that the training we've had so far isn't enough, and we might have to stop and think some more about what other resources we need, what other training we might need. So we build in a kind of action reflection process to our training model. What else do we need to do? Well, as part of our preparation, clearing the ground in a very local setting, the first thing we do is that we begin to identify people of peace. I don't know if you're familiar with that phrase, but it comes from the setting in Luke's Gospel where Jesus sends the 70, and he commands them to look for people who will be receptive to their message, and that they will then bring or bless them with peace. Peace will be upon their house. People of peace. Strange how you can be very familiar with the Bible and miss something which is actually incredibly obvious once it's been pointed out to you. And I've never noticed that little piece about people of peace. And yet actually it's a powerful thing. Because what it reminds us of is simply this, that God, wherever we are, has already gone ahead of us to prepare the ground and to prepare particular people who will be the gateways to that situation. And actually, if we can find people of peace, that will often be a huge shortcut to getting right inside a community very, very quickly, and finding a kind of receptivity that we might otherwise struggle to find. So locating the people of peace is very, very important. I was speaking to an Indian church planter recently who'd planted something like 600 congregations in a particular area of India, and his method was to train people to look for people of peace. In their particular setting, the way they did it was they just went round the village praying every day until eventually somebody would say to them, "What are you doing?" And they were trained to expect that the person that said, "What are you doing?" was the person of peace, and the church was to start in their home. Now, that might not work in Zurich. I somehow doubt that it would. But however we do it, we need to figure out, Lord, how are we going to find the people of peace in this neighborhood? Because they will be an important key. Secondly, we need to look at the neighborhood that we're trying to reach and assess the needs. What are the needs that this neighborhood has in particular? Are there needs around children? Are there needs around teenagers? Is there some other kind of need? What might we be able to do to meet some of those needs so that we can begin to build relationship, make connection with the people in the neighborhood? Out of some of those relationships, our goal is to create small group meetings. In times past, the very first thing that church planting teams used to do was to try and get a public worship meeting. And I want to suggest to you that that's actually not the best thing to do straight away. For one thing, public worship meetings are very, very resource intensive. And all of the energy that goes into running a public worship meeting could actually be used better in engaging in preparation, in mission. So I would almost tend to suggest that you put off the public worship launch for as long as possible. I would suggest that it would be best to have maybe as many as 50 people in small groups before you get to the public launch. a lot of effort goes into maintaining public worship, and that's effort that could be best used somewhere else. What you can do, though, is hold occasional meetings, celebrations perhaps, maybe every few months. Find an occasion to celebrate, something that connects with the local community. Most communities enjoy food, so something around food that could be a celebration that would bring people together in larger numbers can be a good thing. And then, of course, while you're doing this, while you're preparing the ground, you are looking for appropriate buildings in which you will one day meet. And those buildings can be varied. They could be a local school, it could be a local community center, it could be all kinds of premises. Sometimes people use shops, sometimes people use working men's clubs, people use all kinds of locations these days. And in one way, it doesn't matter what you use except for this. What you need to be thinking about whenever you're looking at a potential location is, what is the hidden message that this building is sending to the community? What is the hidden message that this building is sending to the community? If we use this building, buildings send messages. What is that message? And so what would be the best place to choose depending on the messages that are sent? And then, of course, throughout all of this process, we do need to be enlisting the power of prayer. Not just praying ourselves, but I would suggest that when you're preparing the ground, it's really very important to enlist prayer partners from outside of the situation. What we're looking to do is not just build relationships, but we're also looking to change the spiritual climate of a neighborhood. It can be good to use those prayer warriors who have a special insight through prayer into what some of the spiritual problems of a neighborhood might be. So maybe you can use prayer warriors to even do some spiritual mapping. What are the things that we need to be aware of? What is God going to reveal through prayer that needs our special attention in a particular setting? So these are some of the preparation activities. And I would say that in conclusion, that throughout all of this process, it's very important that we see cultural insiders converted. And what I mean by that is that sometimes I've seen situations where people will bring in a church planting team, and the church planting team are cultural outsiders. And very often the people that they also attract are people that don't actually live in the neighborhood, but they just hear that a new work is going on and they're attracted. It's very important that we don't get distracted by the fact that, well, it's nice to have people helping us, it's nice to have people assisting us, but we do need to keep our eye on the particular target where we must be reaching people inside the target area. Who are the cultural insiders? And in particular, it's good to be asking ourselves, who are the leaders in this neighborhood? Would it be possible to see some of the people of peace converted? Would it be possible to see some of the leaders in this neighborhood converted? Because these are the people who hold the keys to that neighborhood. Very important that we see cultural insiders converted and not just bring a crowd from outside.